Tired of hearing the same old takes from the same old people? Looking to add some humor, culture, and energy to your daily grind? Your search just might be over. At Rise Network, we're a global multimedia platform for the best and most diverse voices in sports, entertainment, and pop culture. Podcasts, streams, articles, reviews, you name it, we do it. Visit us at Rise Network US on all social media platforms or visit www.risenetworkus.com for more info. What are you waiting for? Come on and rise with us. The Upside Swings Draft Podcast is the official NBA draft podcast of the Rise Entertainment Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Upside Swings NBA Draft Podcast, the podcast of the highest ceiling. I'm your host, Bryce Hendricks, joined as always by the great Cooper Klein and the wonderful Stone Hansen. And we are here to do our early overreactions pod. This is a new thing. We haven't done it yet. But we're probably going to do it more in the future because it's really fun. And we've had a fun time coming up with these. Basically, we've each come up with four overreactions to the early college international kind of draft season. These aren't things we necessarily like believe. These are things, you know, we might have different percentiles of faith in, but they're fun overreactions that we just want to discuss. So I think we're going to have a lot of fun with this. But before we get into it, Coop, Stone, my friends, how are you doing?
Doing great. Just coming off the other podcast with Chucking Darts, always a blast. So double duty today. But I'm excited to talk. Always a blast talking hoops.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I apologize for my awful mic audio. I'm at home this week, and I left my good mic down the city. But other than that, I'm doing good. Happy to be here late at night with the boys. Talk some overreactions.
This is a throwback to Cooper's first appearance on the pod. Back when he came on to talk Rockets, and it's a very nice reminder. I think we should just dive right into it. I don't think we want to be here too long. Stone is open. I'm going back home tomorrow. Coop already is back home. We won't be too long on this, but this is a really fun pod. We're excited to get into it. And Stone, you're up first with what some will come away with as the hottest take we have in this whole pod. So the floor is yours, my friend.
Oh, man. Yeah. I imagine I'm going to lose a lot of followers after I say this. We're coming in hot with a super hot overreaction. My overreaction is Jaden Hardy is not a first-round prospect. The decision-making has just not been great. It's been really bad, actually, in my opinion. Defensively, it's been very brutal. He's a tough shot maker. When he is efficient, it's good. When he's not, I struggle to see what else he provides on the court. That said, my strong overreaction is he is not a first round prospect because it's a replaceable skill set.
All right, I'm coming in, and this is one I like full on agree with. I'm not even gonna qualify this with a well, it's early.
It's just a reaction.
I think this is something that I actually had brewing in me before draft season started, and I didn't have the balls to say it. But I'll say it now. I don't have Jaden Hardy top 30 right now. I actually don't even have him top 40. I think his size as a wing is really worrying, and he doesn't have the skills to be a guard right now. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I can't really say I disagree with the overreaction. I'd say he's on the verge of my first round. I can see why some people would really hate this because some of the flashes can be really, really insane. But the bad flashes are just as prevalent and almost worse than the good flashes, which feel a lot more few and far between. So I don't know. This might be the least hot take on the entire pod for me.
We're gonna lose so many followers from this podcast.
People will hate it. So I should dive into a little bit more depth. And if you guys have any disagreements here, let me know. I'll start off by saying I think Jaden Hardy is a pretty disastrous defender right now. I don't like his gambles off the ball. I think they're made pretty recklessly. On the ball, he dies on every single screen, and he's not really big enough to guard wings. So I think defensively it's already kind of a mess. That can usually be forgiven with high-level offensive prospects. I don't think that's Hardy. He doesn't get to the rim very often. He's making fine passes, but I wouldn't call him an elite passer by any means. And when you're not generating rim pressure and you're not an elite passer, that becomes really tough. He's not generating any space as a ball handler. He's not, you know, getting separation for these tough off the dribble shots. He's sort of just like a tough shot maker who only gets tough shots. That's not something I really value.
Yeah, it's a tough shot maker. And I would say he's been a decent passer, much like Dyson Daniels. It's like simplistic yet accurate. They're very not, and neither of them are making very like advanced passes, although Dyson's sort of developed a little bit. But both of them are pretty simplistic passers, and Hardy's pretty accurate though, I would say. But yeah, the decision making is what a lot of this stems from, I think, because he's just not, when you're a tough shot maker and not a good decision maker, those two things, it's very difficult because you're making your shots selection harder than it needs to be, I think, a lot of the time. And when they're just not going down and you don't have the size to really provide a lot else, it's very difficult for me to buy at least a lottery hype with Hardy. But I can see both sides as to why people have him, you know, top five still, and why people like Cooper and Bryce are don't see him as first round pick. So maybe this wasn't as hot as I thought it was going to be. But
I think I still technically have a first round because I haven't rearranged my board.
Okay.
But I will say about Hardy, I do like when he gets easy shots, like when teammates create easy open threes, he knocks them down at a pretty good rate.
Yeah.
I have kind of liked him as like, I talked to Bryce about this when we did the live show, but like, I've liked him as a tertiary guy. Like when there are two other creators on the floor and he doesn't have to do very much, I have enjoyed that. But how many teams are going to draft him and put him in a role where he is allowed to just be the third guy? He's going to be drafted to be a primary or secondary guy.
Yeah.
That's kind of my big problem.
That's a good way of putting it, because I think he's best suited where other people are doing a lot of the creative work for him, but he's just not going to be developed in that way by any team that takes him. So, yeah, I think that's about it for the Hardy takes for us.
Yeah, I think we're good. My dog is a mess right now, so that might throw the pot off. We'll see. But it's my turn for a hot take. And this is one that I don't think any of us will agree with, even myself, but I've been so impressed with him in the early season. I think there's a real chance for this to happen by the end of the year. And that's Kendall Brown is the number one overall pick. And I shouldn't say pick. I should say we'll end up number one overall on my board. Should be the better. He will be the number one overall player in this class for me. I loved everything I've seen from him so far at Baylor. Been my favorite player to watch this early season. And I think there's potential for him to grow throughout the season and really work his way up to that top spot. So if anyone has any reactions to that overreaction, let me know.
I love Kendall Brown. I think I have him pretty easily top three right now. I love the playmaking that he's shown. I've really loved his stuff in transition. His work out of the corners has been pretty nice. He's been really aggressive. He never looks rushed, but he's super athletic. So it's like a really interesting mixture of like being in control. Like for his age, it's just really, really impressive. There's not been a lot of stuff that I haven't liked. He's been a bit over aggressive at times, but you know, I prefer somebody to be over aggressive than rein him back, than them not be aggressive enough, have to, you know, coach them to be more aggressive. So he's just been super impressive. I can see this one happening. I'm not there yet. There's a somebody whose name rhymes with Mabari Gith-Smunier, who is in his path at the moment. But, it's a good one. I like that one. I like that overreaction.
Yeah. I mean, 6'8", Andre Curbelo has been pretty fun to watch. His in-air body control is pretty impressive for his size. Some of the wraparound passes, and he does have like legitimately impressive vision in terms of sort of how he sees the game unfolding before him, before it sort of happens, like a little bit before, which guys that size, it's not always the easiest thing to find in them. So I've been really impressed with Kendall Brown. I'm not sure. I mean, this might be as hot as the Jaden Hardy take apparently. So not sure how hot we've been so far, but I feel like we've been pretty warm.
Yeah, I think we're on a roll right now. So I'll just say, like, Kendall Brown, everything I want in a basketball player other than a jump shot right now, and even the jump shot, he's taken some. Like, he's not a nothing shooter right now. I think that the touch is there. There are some issues. I'm not going to dive super deep into a scout on him right now or anything, but yeah, I mean, the defense, the passing, the athleticism, it's all so real. I think I had him 14, excuse me, on my preseason board because I was worried he wouldn't play much for Baylor. But as soon as he started playing, he's done exactly what I expect him to do. Like, he was always going to shoot up like this. And I'm a huge fan. Really, really impressed by Kendall Brown so far. Coop, it is your turn to give your first overreaction.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the hottest one so far for the Jaden Hardy believers. And that is Nikola Jovic isn't a top 45 player in the class. And he won't end up as one on my board. Do y'all have any? I mean, it's the defense that's the reason, and maybe the offense isn't as there as you'd like. Not really, he's not a super savant like some people thought, including myself. My quick argument.
I feel like this might be again another warm one, actually, because I on Twitter a couple weeks ago, someone had told me he's not a first round pick for them, and I was like, I can legitimately see a pathway to where I see him like in sort of the middle of the second round sort of guy for me, because he is so bad defensively, and offensively I agree with you where he's not sort of the savant that maybe myself included thought he was earlier on. So with those things, there's enough offense there for me to buy into him being like, you know, if you're 6'9" and can make the passes he can and are creative as he can, and still, you know, a fine shooter, I think there's probably some role in the NBA for you, but I'm not sure where that bet is worth taking for me. It's certainly not top 10 anymore for me, but top 45 it's pretty warm. So I'm not sure I'm quite there yet.
I think my thing with Jovic, so I agree, like, I think a lot of it is kind of style, no substance with Jovic. Like, there's a lot of fun stuff there. And it's just tough for me to see what his role really is. And that's not always a bad thing, right? Like, there are I don't even know what you would call it. Like players, prospects don't really have clear roles who are valuable guys, but there's like a couple guys I'm already picking out is like, these are going to be the toughest evals of the class. And Jovic is one of those guys. Like, he's so tough to get like a true read on. His size is great. I think the passing is good, not great. Like, I don't think he's like a savant level passer. I don't think he is. I don't think he's always looking to create advantages with his passing. I think he's kind of just sometimes doing things to do them. I think the shot is kind of inconsistent and the defense is horrendous. But at a certain point when you're 6'11 and as offensively talented as him, there's something there. It's just a matter of where he's going to end up. It's really hard to get a read on.
Yeah, it does pain me to bring this hot take into the world because he's a fellow water polo player. Gotta have pride in that. But if nobody has anything else, Stone, you want to hopefully actually bring out a real hot take for apparently the first time in this whole podcast.
Yeah. If we want to get real hot here, I'm hoping this is the one. My overreaction is Ariel Hakpourty is a lottery talent. And it sounds crazy, but there's a very small pathway to where I can actually see this happening, like by the end of this draft cycle. It's not a big one, but it's big enough for me to at least bring it up. He's been outstanding, I think, in the NBL so far. He's really sort of come into his own in terms of a mobile big that has the necessary ancillary skills to not fall into the sort of rim running archetype that a lot of guys can. And that's really important, I think. If you are able to space the floor a little bit, if you can make a lot of the passes that he can, out of the post most of the time, but even then, there's a lot of nice high post passes that he makes. There's a lot of ancillary things that just sort of prevent him for me to becoming the stereotypical sort of two-way international rim running type guy. So I've been really impressed so far. Again, this is an overreaction. I can't overstate that enough, but there's a very slim chance it might not be by the end of this draft cycle.
McCourty's good, man. I think we're finally, with the NBL, we're seeing him play a bit more of what his NBA role is going to be, which is sort of the worry with evaluating him last year. He's using those guard skills in a more contained way. He's not trying to just create from a standstill on the perimeter, but he gets going in the short role. He can make passes. He's a good athlete. I think there's still questions about what level of defender he is. I haven't seen enough to really dive into that, but just by nature of him being a big, I don't know if I see Lotto here, but he is very good, very fun. I could see top 20, top 25. And I would give it almost 50% chance he ends up as a borderline first rounder for me, because when you're as athletic as he is and have the path to success he does, it's just, it makes your life a lot easier. So Hug Forty's been good, and he's really, really interesting.
Yeah, he's really, funky is the word I would use, and he's able to show off a bit more of what differentiates him as a prospect from other bigs in the NBL. His athleticism, everything he's able to show, I think I probably have him first round right now. Because I'm a psychopath, but I can see borderline lottery as like an actually realistic outcome if he's really able to show his stuff in the NBL.
Yeah, I think that's a great take. So talking about another big, we all know our favorite things. My next hot take is that Efe Abogidi is a top 30 player. We all saw this coming. I don't know where I'm going to end up with FA. It's going to be really, really hard for me to take any bias out of it. I'm going to have to probably consult with these two and try and find a real place. But he is a really, really good rim protector. He looks improved offensively. He's sort of done less in these past two games, but I think the UC Santa Barbara game was huge for him. And I think that he'll be really important in Pac-12 play. I think he's the type of player who might take a bump when playing against better competition. I think he's a really, really special rim protector who does enough offensively. And I think there is upside for him to be like the best rim protector to come out of this class. And if he's like a versatile offensive player, that becomes really interesting. So I don't know if you guys have many takes. I doubt FA has been a circled guy for you guys to watch tape on and scout, but if you have any takes on this overreaction, let me know.
He's 100% circled just because you love him so much. I just haven't had the time to watch any WSU games up to this point, and I didn't watch much of them last year, so I don't really have any strong Abogidi takes at this point in time.
I got to watch all the clips Bryce posted on Twitter. I'm an FA fan. I made the TikTok on him that is on the Upside Swings TikTok account right now.
Shameless.
I'm absolutely shameless with the TikTok. I will say in a class with Chet Holmgren, what does FA need to do to be the best? You call him just shot blocker or rim protector in this class, Bryce?
Oh, okay. I should say best rim protector in this class because it's Chet. Like, and no one's going to top Chet. But I would say, like, I would say there's a real chance he could be, like, the second best shot blocker and up there for rim protector. Like, he still has some way to go because he's just smaller. But I think he can be a straight five in the NBA. Like, I'm not one of those guys who thinks he's, like, a secondary rim protecting four. Like, I think he can be a five in the NBA as just a pure rim protector. Because of his he's really excellent at getting vertical. He high points blocks. He has good timing, like everything you could want from, like, he's undersized and you have to compensate for so much. And he does that so well that I think he can really get there. The block rate for a little bit was crazy. It was at like 18.4%. It's dropped down because Idaho and Winthrop both just shoot a shit ton of threes and didn't really drive into him at all. But for those first four games playing against teams that play, you know, more sort of conventional college styles, and I think you'll see that in the Pac-12 as well, like, he had like a nuts block. He had an 18% block rate, like, just insane, and was averaging like 4.5 blocks a game. And again, the UCSB one is just super impressive. And I think that'll come back during Pac-12 play, because when you play these mid-majors, sometimes it can really hurt your stats as a rim protector because they sometimes specialize in ways like that. Like I said, like Idaho and Winthrop, like, they win by just shooting hella threes. Or with Winthrop, they like to, you know, post up with DJ Burns, and it's hard to get block shots on post-ups. But when you start to play more conventional, like spread pick and roll, or, you know, more conventional college teams, high major teams, it opens up the floor for you to get more blocks. So that's my spiel on that. But I think, like, he might be like a top three rim protector in college basketball right now. And I could see him being like one of the better shot blocking prospects in this class.
So if y'all are ready for my sizzling, spicy, burning hot take, and that is, we're going to be a bit obsessed with Baylor here, and that is Jeremy Sochan. I've heard it pronounced different ways. If you guys want to correct me, but Jeremy Sochan or Han is Sochan. Okay, is a lottery talent. I have loved what I've seen out of him this season. He's super young. He is incredibly aggressive. I love his physicality, his athleticism. His stuff is a weak side rim protector. He has really good timing. He's also a great passer. Like, he just seems like a super good bet by, like, the way that I view potential to be like a high potential forward. He's 6'9", strong. I think he's just a good bet to improve at the NBA level and just be a lottery talent.
I love Sochan. He has a little bit of ways to go with the shot right now. The numbers aren't great, especially on free throws. It's early. There's still plenty of time left. But, yeah, I mean, Sochan was someone who I came into this season really high on. I just thought he wouldn't play much for Baylor. He's playing 22 minutes per game right now. And he looks good. He just looks good. I'm really, really excited for what he's going to do. I'm a major fan. I'm not quite lottery yet, but I definitely see that there is, like, if he shoots like at even like an average level with everything else he does, like, he should, and his age, he's young too. He should end up a lottery prospect for me.
We'll say this is the one that I think that I actually believe the most out of all of mine. I think there's just, I think he should be starting over Matt Meyer. I'm just not a Matt Meyer fan. Even if the shooting was, like, good for Matthew Meyer to start the season, I would still be condoning Sochan play over him because the offense looks so much better when he's in there and the ball is able to flow more. He just consistently does all of the good things that, you know, you need a connective forward to do, except for make shots at the moment. He's also taken, like, 10 total free throws. And when you only make four of them, you're going to look like you're the worst shooter on planet Earth. So we'll see. Hopefully the shooting numbers turn around, and if they get to anywhere near passable or optimistic, I'm pretty sure he'll be in my lottery.
Yeah, and I'll also say, part of the reason that the offense looks better with Sochan out there rather than Meyer is because one of those players passes and the other doesn't. So, that kind of goes a long way. We don't have any Matthew Meyer hot takes on here, so had to get that out. Stone, I know you love Sochan, so take it away.
I so love Sochan. He is, when you're a very strong player who has a very high feel, as evidenced by JRE last year, I will love you and die on that hill. Sochan is both of those things and probably a better shooter at this point. I'm very in on Sochan. And I actually put it out on Twitter that I can very realistically see myself having him as a lot of talent by the end of this cycle. And I'm starting to move sort of that way. Not quite there yet, but I think at some point in time, I'll probably be there.
Also say, we don't have this on here, but another quick Baylor hot take is that, LJ Cryer looks like a better prospect than Adam Flagler right now. So, for those interested in our Baylor hot takes.
He's also been hurt, right?
Shorter?
No, he's been hurt.
Oh, right? Flagler? Yeah, yes. Yeah, he's been coming back from Anyways, Stone, I believe you are next.
This might be the hottest one on here, maybe. Cooper's given me a lot of grief for this. Probably will continue for the rest of my eternity on this planet. But Nzoza, Yannick, I do not have him as a draftable player, is my overreaction. I know that's a hot take for a lot of people, but when you're this bad offensively, it is so rough to figure out what he does offensively at an NBA level. And the defense will provide some sort of threshold for him. But at the same time, he's got such a low feel on offense, and some of it does come to play on defense. There's points in time where he just makes poor reads defensively, even though he's a great defender because of the physical gifts that he has. There's some reads that he makes defensively that makes you question really his feel for the game on both ends. It is very, very rough for him offensively. It's going to sound extremely harsh, but there's just really nothing he does on that end that provides any value to a team. And I don't really see what his pathways to developing them are, because he's got really no touch around the rim, really no shooting flashes whatsoever, and just poor feel for where his teammates are on the court, takes bad shots. It's just a mess on that end. I really wanted to like Nzoza, but so far I've been very much disappointed, and it hurts me to say that.
Yeah, I'm roasting you for some of these later ones, Stone. I will say, I since our top 20 that we did, where I had Nzoza top five, I have dropped a little bit on him. I've come to Jesus on him, but I started to really like. I knew he was a bad offensive player. I did not think that he was I didn't know it was possible for somebody who could dunk and was this athletic to be such a disaster on the offensive end. I hold on hope, because the potential to be the most versatile defender to ever touch the hardwood is there. But it gets slimmer every single time you watch film. You're not able to pick, sure, you can have all the tools in the world, but if you're not able to really put it all together and use your brain and make reads on offense and defense, then you're just, you're Damian Jones. That's just, I don't want that for Nzoza. I really believe that he has the potential to do more, but I don't think I'll drop him out of my first round unless this really continues and he just is this awful. But I have a lot of hope. It's also making it hard to hold on to hope.
I admire the hope. No, you really do.
I'll just say I'm closer to Stone than Coop on Enzosa and leave it there. I don't want to belabor the point, but Howard is even really that good defensively. Like, he's good, but, like, he's not Usman. I mean, like, anyways, I'll move on to my hot take. I think that's enough on Enzosa. He'll be someone who's going to be really interesting when we do our full or deep dive scout on him, just where we started the season versus where we're going to end it. My next overreaction is that Marjon Beauchamp should be the first G-League Ignite player drafted. This obviously is not counting Scooter Henderson. He's not in this draft because obviously he should be the highest G-League Ignite player drafted, if you want to put it that way. But in terms of this year's draft, Marjon Beauchamp should be the first G-League Ignite player drafted. 6'6 wing, he's really impressed me so far.
This is sort of a warm take to me, to be honest. I can see it. And I'm a Dyson Daniels stan, so obviously I'm not going to say he's better than my boy Dyson, but he's not a distant second by any means. I think Beauchamp has really impressed a lot of people this season. I think he's pretty much like consensus first round for a lot of people at this point. And I don't really see any reason why that wouldn't stick to the end of this draft cycle. He's been able to really like maximize his athleticism at a lot of points throughout the season. The shooting has been the flashes have been really nice to see with the shooting. There's some stuff that gives you a lot of optimism. The issue with Beauchamp, obviously, is the age for a lot of people. I think that's where maybe a lot of the disconnect will be for some people, whether it be Hardy or Daniels. I think the age will be sort of somewhat of a major factor for people, but Beauchamp is doing what he needs to do to be in this sort of first-round conversation, and for me, near lotto conversation. I know for Bryce, he's in there, but he's really looked the part of what he's supposed to do, and you can't really ask much more.
Yeah, I think that's about where I am. I mean, he's 6'6". The shot making looks good. I've been really impressed by the defense. I think he's looked really solid defensively. Still has some growing to do, kind of over gambles sometimes. But I think he's been the best player on that team other than Scoot. I think Scoot has played. But
every prospect for 2022 for the G League Ignite team, every single one of them is an over gamble prospect defensively, I think.
Except Michael Foster, who doesn't do anything on defense.
Yeah, well, he doesn't gamble because he doesn't do defense, but yeah.
that's not his end of the ball. Anyways, Coop, do you have any takes on Marjon?
Marjon only 20? Is that like the like is he
okay? So this is really weird. I assumed he was my age, right? We graduated, or he was a year older than me. We graduated the same year. He's from my area, so. But I knew he was a year older than me. Then I saw on Google, like when it showed his age, it showed he was born in 2000. Or no, that was on the G League Ignite, the official roster listing. So he would be 22 come draft time. I don't know what's correct. But that's sort of where the fudginess comes from, his age. If that's the case, then that means when I played him, he was 2 years older than me playing 17U, and that's frustrating. But I don't know what year he was actually like where I thought he was 1 year older than me. That was my assumption. Because we were both class of 2020 graduates. But I knew he had reclassed like down, or however you want to put that, reclassed down back in middle school. Which is where you kind of purposely get held back. Ton of potential top basketball players do that. But yeah, it's I don't know. I don't know what to trust with his age. It's kind of weird, but he's either going to be 21 or 22 come draft time.
How much, as the Marjon guy here, how much will that play factor into where you have him on your board?
Enough. I mean, I'm someone who, I think I weigh age where it matters. And with Marjon, it's tough because of he's already at like a game reps deficit because of that weird sort of gap year he took after high school where he did the Chameleon XL thing that fell apart instead of playing somewhere, doing anything to play. And then he ended up playing like a small community college that's pretty local to me for like half a season. It was also weird. So I think if he turns out to be 22 and not 21, that would probably drop him a couple spots. I don't think it would be enough to drop him a tier, but I think it would be enough to put some other younger players ahead of him when that time comes.
Yeah, so, you know, it fits everything on Marjon, if I'm not mistaken. So my next one is Jabari Smith is in his own tier at the top of this class. I think Jabari is really impressed. He'd come out and shown even more than I expected of him in this, you know, in the Auburn system with, you know, great players that fit his skills around him. He's been a stocks machine. I really liked his defensive footwork, his IQ, but also the mix of playing it smart with gambling a little bit more and, you know, taking tough shots off the dribble. He's like, if he can get a first step, he can get right to the rim and just slam it on you, but it's harder for him to get that first step just because he's, you know, he's so big and he's Big Ten, and that first step is going to be, you know, a lot longer than somebody who's 6'4". I think if he can really, you know, continue his production and show a bit more flashes, maybe improve, like tighten up the handle a little bit. I know that's hard for a guy who's 6'10". If you want to see somebody with his skills really be able to handle the ball a bit better in traffic, I think he could really take that tier leap as the year goes on.
Yeah, I think that's well within reason. I'm not there yet. It's the top of the draft is still very muddled for me at this point in time. I'm still trying to get some sort of clarity at the very top, but I can definitely see a pathway where Jabari ends up as like the clear cut number one for me. I'm just not quite there yet, but for all the reasons you've pretty much laid out, I think he's number one for me, just not in a tier of his own.
I think Jabari Smith could end up number one for me. I think it's very unlikely he ends up in a tier of his own. My worry with Jabari Smith, and when you're talking about these top prospects, it's always going to be some nitpicks. I feel like Jabari Smith doesn't create super easy looks for himself. It's a little thing. Like it's not a little thing. It's a big thing, but it's tough to like the pull up is so money right now. I think that's going to fluctuate. Obviously, like that's just how things go until you get sort of developed into the league and that pull up becomes, you know, a deadly go-to. Like the mechanics are great. Like he's going to be a great shooter. I think he's going to be a good defender. He's smooth at 6'10". Like he's a full on wing. I love Jabari Smith. Like I said, I'm nitpicking. But I think when it comes against high major competition, there's going to be some fluctuation because I don't think he's going to create easy looks. I think someone like a Paolo creates a lot more consistent easy looks for himself by just being – like he has that go-to of just being so much stronger than whoever's guarding him. And I think that's the separator for me that at least is going to keep those guys in the same tier. And then I'll also point to Kendall Brown as just being like, leagues above both those guys as a passer that might keep him in that same tier. Like I struggle to see there being much separation between those three for me. Like it's super early and things can always change, but those three kind of seem like they're going to be my go-to top three in this class, at least for most of it. And it's tough for me to see there being much separation between them unless some pretty outlier stuff happens come their conference play.
I would say that the argument that Jabari Smith weighs like 200 pounds, but he's got a frame to put on a pretty good amount of muscle. Like he's not super spindly. And if he's able to put on a little bit of extra pound, he's already able to generate a ton of force heading towards the rim. And getting that first step, like I talked about, is less important when you have that extra strength on you and it's harder to throw you around. So I think it'll be like he puts on, you know, what, 20, 25 pounds, he's a drastically different player and probably able to create more easy looks. Of course, that's projection to a pretty, you know, intense degree. But I think that that's very well within the realm of possibility.
I if you look at his frame, though, there's like, I don't see a reason why he wouldn't put on like 20 to 30 pounds over the course of the next 5 years or so. Like, he's got the frame to really do so. I don't see, like, it's not a Chet level concern for me where I'm afraid he might not put on 10 pounds. He's got the complete body to do it, the build to do it. And I don't really see what's stopping him from doing so.
I should say my worry isn't the strength itself and more just that he doesn't create easy looks. And then I was comparing him to Paolo by saying that Paolo has that strength. Like, Paolo can reliably put a shoulder into someone and get a generally open look at the rim anytime he really needs to. Like, Jabari doesn't have that go-to, like, this is going to create, like, a shot I can hit 50% of the time, every time down the floor, the way, like, a Paolo does. And that's all I'm saying. Like, it's not just the strength that worries me, because if Jabari Smith Jr. only puts on, like, 10 more pounds, like that's fine. Like, I think he's a three in the NBA. Like, he looks like a legit three to me. It's just that I don't think he has, like, any go-to scoring moves right now to be, like, that, like, number one guy that just gets you a bucket every time down the floor. You know, like, creating easy looks for yourself is incredibly important. And I don't think Jabari Smith does that super well right now. He sometimes gets some open looks off some deceptive handle or, you know, just by getting so much space and having such a high release on his pull up, but that's not consistent right now. So that's all I'm saying with Jabari Smith is that to have a guy at the top, I want them to be able to consistently create easy looks for themselves. Stone, it is your turn for your next overreaction. And this might be the quickest one we have.
I'm the lone person on the planet Earth who is a Nigel Peck stan, but I, much like Isaiah Cordigny, I will stay on that planet until the end of time. I have Nigel Peck as a draftable prospect this season, is my overreaction. And I'm not completely sold it's an overreaction. Like, I think he actually could be by the end of the cycle for me. He's a really underrated ball handler. Like, he's able to get to his spots fairly decently. He is undersized, but he is able to compensate for it with the shooting gravity that he has, because he just really makes teams spread out a bit. He's been a lot better defensively this season too. Again, you can only be so good at the size that he is defensively, but he's come a long ways in terms of knowing sort of like when to take the opportune gambles, and in passing lane specifically, but also not been like a complete disaster at the point of attack, which is, I guess, as good as you can hope for a guy like him. I've been fairly impressed with Peck. I think he's a good enough passer, although I'd like to see more out of him in that regard, because I actually think he's a decent passer. He just doesn't utilize it quite enough. And he's a pretty good shooter. So those couple of things are what's got me high on Nigel Peck, what's always had me high on Nigel Peck, and I will die high on Nigel Peck.
I have nothing to add.
I'm telling you that the hate I get for Nigel Peck, love, is quite disgusting. But
yeah, I have nothing to add except for I disagree with you, Stone. unless you have anything to defend yourself.
I feel like I just did, but if you cannot see it my way, it is okay.
I think we're fine to move on from Nigel Peck. He's fine. He is fine. I would not have him draftable almost no matter what, because last time I checked, he's like below 6'4" and doesn't do cool shit on the defensive end. So like, I'm out. I know, but I think he could be a fine backup guard if things work out. Like, that's where I am with most like good college guards. I feel like it's evaluating guards. We talked about this forever. At a certain point, it becomes such a crapshoot, because like the ones that work out, like like, no one on earth predicted TJ McConnell would be like a 10-year NBA player. Like, he wasn't even that good at Arizona. He was like fine. Oh, it's so like at a certain point, it's just like certain guys stick. Like, because being a guard is so intangible. It's so about like how well can you run the run the plays that the offense wants. Like, how loud are you on the court? Like, there's so many little things like that that we don't always think of as evaluators, and we shouldn't. Like, that's like, because at a certain point when it comes about backup guards, you just sign the best ones and you don't worry too much about drafting them. Like, but it's such a crapshoot when you're like trying to pick between backup guards. I think there are some that really stand out. And then after that, it's just, it's so much based on things we couldn't possibly scout. So, I hope things work out for Nigel Pack because he's fun to watch, but I'm not
he's a blast. And what you said about TJ McConnell, how no one predicted that he'd be this good is true, but you'll never be able to say that about Nigel Pack. You can hear it here first. I predicted.
That's perfect. All right. So speaking of my obvious hate of people who are below 6'4", including myself and Cooper and Stone, we are all self-loathing as we all know. No college PG should be drafted in the top 25. This is, I don't know how hot this is. This is tough because there's some guys who I think are going to turn their seasons around. I think Ty Ty is going to figure some things out eventually. I will say this does not include Jaden Ivey. I'm not counting him as a point guard here. You know, you could say that's cheating, but whatever. I don't care. This is my game. I made up the rules. So Jaden Ivey, not college PG. He's a college shooting guard. But no college point guard should be drafted in the top 25. I'll just throw it up to the peanut gallery to give you a pick.
I mean, it comes down to how you classify Ty Ty and Jaden Ivey. If you don't see them as point guards, then this is
classifying Ty Ty as a point guard.
Okay. I mean, even still, like the start he's had, it's reasonable, I guess. I disagree with it and you're wrong, but it's a reasonable take. Nolan Hickman, like how far away is he from this discussion?
Nolan Hickman is the one that I think will crack my top 25. Okay. Yeah. I love Nolan as a person too. So like I'm biased. I know. But he looked so good tonight against UCLA.
Yeah.
Just the highlights I've seen, Nolan is so good. Nolan is that type of guy. We've talked about this in the guard philosophy with Jan, talked about this with Malachi Flynn in the past, where I feel like you can give the ball to him and he can run a ton of pick and rolls and it would look like good, like a good offense, you know. Even if that's just manifest as a backup guard, like you'd be hard pressed to say like Monty Morris wasn't worth the top 30 pick in his draft, right? Because it's just like at a certain point, like to run a backup unit, if you can just run 100 pick and rolls as a point guard and not turn the ball over and make good passes, like that means something. I think that could be Nolan Hickman. I think Tyrese Hunter from Iowa State is an underrated guy here who I think could end up cracking my top 30. There's a couple other guys. Like this is one of those that I don't think my board will end up like this. You know what I mean? I think there are guys who are going to crack. Marcus Sasser might even crack my top 25. But I think there's a real possibility that no college PG ends up in my top 25. Like I would say it's about 50-50 right now. So I find that really interesting because it feels like there's almost always a college point guard that goes top 10. And for there to not be a clear top 25, top 30 guy, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's when you put it that way, like I hadn't really thought about it in that sort of mindset, but that is pretty crazy. I mean, Jan is obviously not college, and I think for all of us is top 25. But yeah, it's a fair take, and I would agree about 50-50.
I did want to ask for some people who I know will be upset. There's no mention of Kennedy Chandler.
Yeah, I thought.
And then also, I'm imagining you're not counting the next Michael Jordan, Tremont Mark, as a point guard.
Tremont Mark is more of a wing to me, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, but no, I'm.
Who
I imagine. I'm not. I'm not worse than people are on Kennedy Chandler. So that's.
I do think some of his pick and roll passing stuff has been interesting. He kind of fits that idea of run 100 pick and rolls and not be awful. But he's just tiny.
He's so tiny. And if the shot isn't falling, and like as soon as he played against like a high level, high major team, he struggled. That's kind of what I saw coming. I don't know. He can prove me wrong. He could really excel in SEC play, but I need to see it with Kenny Chandler. I'm not there. Coop, you are going to take us home with your last one of the night. So give us the Usmane Jang overreaction.
I've been inspired by my friend, Chip, Bulls Dynasty, and just Chip J NBA. Usmane Jang has the highest potential of any player in this class. I think his combination of size, off the dribble scoring, flashes of passing, some of the stuff he showed off the ball in the NBL games, and potentially defensively with his length and athleticism. And if he's able to bulk up, I don't think he has a super great frame for it, but if he can get to not stick figure, I think he has a real chance to just blow people away with what he's able to do.
Go ahead, Stan.
Go ahead. I'm collecting my thoughts still.
So this is one that I admire where you're coming from. I don't think I'm quite there. Maybe. This class is tough because there's no player that I'm like, I can see them being like an offensive engine. Like, and maybe that's Usmane. I mean, maybe. I like this one. This is a great one to end it on. Even because, like, I don't think there's a world where Usmane ends up number one on my board. Even though I like him a lot, I think he probably ends up top five if the NBL stuff looks fine. It's just, he's tough to evaluate. I think my worry right now is that I don't think his handle is quite there to, like, let him access a lot of the stuff you would need to have the highest potential. And handle is one of those things I don't ever, ever, ever want to count on going through major improvements because it's so rare. It's very feast or famine when you're looking at handle improvements. I mean, for every Paul George, there's a million, you know. I don't even have an example. EJ Johnson. Lonzo Balls. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's inflexible in his hips, which is nice. Like, it's not like Lonzo Ball, where Lonzo Ball just has no shift in his hips at all, so he can never, ever develop that. But it's just it's interesting. This is an interesting question. I think it's going to be about thresholds with Usmane, because I think when you describe his potential archetypes, he sounds like the highest, like, ceiling guy in this class. But I think when you break down that, I don't think he's quite that level of passer, quite that level of shooter, quite that level of finisher. Like, it gets harder to say that. But in terms of pure archetype, I think he actually, like, he is the highest value archetype in this class if he hits his ceiling.
Yeah. I still think, like, if we're talking ultimate ceilings here, it's probably Chet for me. Like, in terms of, like, ultimate ceilings in this class, I think Chet's just got the rim protection, the shooting, and this is theoretical, right? But, like, in ball handling as a big that is really, like, just pretty, like, one-of-one type things. But, yeah, I mean, there's a world where Jing is sort of in that same sort of tier. I guess the other guy I would throw in here, too, is Adrian Griffin Jr., like, in the elite, top one percentile outcome type stuff we're talking. I think he's sort of the offensive guy that Bryce is talking about. But I don't totally disagree that Jiang is there too. So I'm sort of conflicted. I'm just not clear if he's like the actual number one guy if we're talking one percentile outcomes.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There's like five or six guys who I would say have the potential to, you know, have the highest potential outcome. Usmane is just like Bryce said, I think the one who, if he like is able to fill the role that I think he can fill, will return the most value, is the most valuable to every single NBA team, no matter which one he's on. Like if he hits that outcome, there's no team that is like, well, we couldn't use another one of these guys. Or there's not a space for him on our roster somewhere. So I don't know if I 100% like, I don't 100% believe it. That's why it's an overreaction. But I think it's very possible.
Yeah, I'm with you. So that's kind of wrapping it up. This is one of those things that I think we're going to try and do a bit of throughout the season. And that's sort of kind of experiment, try some different things. So if you listen to this and you like it, let us know. Or if you don't like it, let us know. And if you have any ideas for other things we should try, let us know. Like, you know, we're super easy to access on Twitter at Upside Swings, on TikTok at Upside Swings. Follow us there. Ask people to request. And you know what? You can request a pod too on TikTok if you want. Yo, go ahead. If you want to, you know, hear us ramble for an hour on some specific prospect, let us know. We talk for an hour about Wemby any day. But yeah, this has been awesome. I've really enjoyed this. Kind of a breezy pod today. I think I know Stone's a little tired. He's a trooper, Coop as well. Happy late Thanksgiving. Actually, I'll cut that part out because this will come out after Thanksgiving. But this has been awesome, guys. Follow Coop at Ali_Oop_Coop. Follow Stone at Report_Court. Follow me at BryceHendrick14. Follow us at Upside Swings. Let us know how you felt about this podcast. If there's anything you vehemently disagree with, let us know. Again, just always feel free to reach out to us. This has been the Upside Swings NBA Draft Podcast. We hope we hit our ceiling. Thank you. I'm gonna tell you no matter.